Second hour, Darren Donegan Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Predators set to hit the ice in less than an hour here at Bridgestone Arena. That's where we are, Darren McFarland and Willie Donick. Chase is off for the week. He'll be back on Monday with us. Marquise Munson is back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. By the way, if you're looking to get two tickets for the price of one, it's two tickets for the price of one, Beach Bend and Splash Lagoon Water Park on sale right now. All you have to do is go to our website, thegamenashville.com, click on Beach Bend, buy one, get one free, and purchase your tickets now for only $37.99. Good deal as we are in the hot July months right now here in Middle Tennessee. By the way, something that I wanted to bring up that I saw, in fact, I think I saw it on Spot Track while we were talking to Michael Jannetty. We're going to bring up something that he said concerning Ryan Tannehill's contract. Did you see where Natalie Portman and a group of, I guess, Hollywood celebs and sports figures are all going to get together and
buy the Mets?
No.
That's a different group of celebrities.
That's a different group. That they are going to start up a women's soccer league.
Good for them. All right.
In 2022. And like I said, Natalie Portman, I think, is leading that group.
All right, Natalie.
How about that? I think Serena Williams is a part of this.
That would be awesome.
How cool is that? But I'm a big fan of Natalie Portman. This just in. I know you are too.
Oh, come on! I'm a big fan of Natalie and Serena. Let's get them going. Let's get that group. I'm a big fan of women's soccer. Let's have a league. We need to have a league for people to play. They have not come up with the formula yet to really have it done right. I know it's a challenge. Same thing with the women's professional hockey. I know they're really trying to get that off the ground. You know, we've had a chance to talk to some of the best players. Remember, they had the All-Star game here. It's just a matter of coming up with the right formula to try to pay the players the way they enough to where they can make a living and have enough people pay to come in there and watch and maybe get some TV rights in there and get it cranking. It's a challenge.
The women's soccer team, though, has people have paid attention.
Taken it to a new level.
When they play in the World Cup, people pay attention.
It is something to watch. They've got a following.
Best of luck to them with that, but it looks like they're going to try to get that thing up and running in 2022. So just wanted to pass that along. Like I said, we had Michael Jannetty on in the first hour of the program. He's the co-founder of SpotTrack, and they track salaries and contracts and all that good stuff. And we asked about the Ryan Tannehill deal. First asked about the Derrick Henry deal, and he liked that a lot and said that he had been saying all along this offseason that he thought 2 years, $25 million was the right deal for Derrick Henry, and basically that's how it played out. I think it ended up being, what, 25 and a half or whatever, 2 years. But that's pretty much how it played out. So he really liked that deal for both the Titans and Derrick Henry.
I thought about it in my mind as, you know, it was great for Derrick Henry to be willing to take the security and take the deal. He made it, he had the other way. He looked the other way about it, Michael did, by saying it was a great gesture by the team to offer him that much money. In other words, they could have played hardball and just said, you're playing, we don't know what's going to happen next year. You're playing for the franchise tag this year, and that is it. You know, forget about the rest. So I hadn't thought about it that way, but really both sides, I think, did a great job of getting rid of any clouds that could hover, a la, as we've had the conversation about very many times. Le'Veon Bell would be a prime example. Melvin Gordon, just the unhappy but extremely talented running back that is a difference maker. They have found common ground, and I think that only is going to help the Titans. So Michael illustrated that. But then we got to Tannehill, and it was a different story.
And here's what he had to say.
I thought it was too early. I thought it was too early in the summer to make, or really the spring, to make that move. And I thought they guaranteed him a little bit too much money up front. I think $91 million guaranteed after certainly a great year, but it was just the 1 year, is a little bit scary. It's risky. It's a lot over the next 3 years to have to essentially write down in pen at this point. I wasn't sure who they were bidding against. We had so many quarterbacks either via the draft or via free agency available this offseason, more than I think we've ever had, that I'm not sure who they were bidding against in the Ryan Tannehill contract, and it feels like they went over the top on that number, especially the guaranteed number. So while I like the player and I'm glad they kept things intact, I wonder if they jumped the gun a little bit on those numbers.
I was a little surprised to hear him say that. I think what's important to remember is at the time that they did that deal, it was just before everything hit, right? Before we had any awareness or mindset of the coronavirus. They made that deal before that, right?
Yes,
I
mean, we talked about
only
that.
A few days before.
We talked about how, I mean, Ryan Tannehill, remember we said he probably wouldn't have got that deal. It's pretty safe to say he may not have gotten that type of deal after everything hit.
Especially.
His timing was perfect.
Especially, as Jannetty pointed out, because there were so many quarterbacks that were looking for a deal. So he made a very interesting point, saying who were they really competing against? Who was going to knock down the door and beat the Titans to Tannehill? So in retrospect, that does make a lot of sense.
Well, because he talked about the quarterback market that we
There were so many people out there. There were
never seen anything like that.
They just did not want to have an alternative. They paid to make sure that they kept the same guy. Even though you could argue that he's still a risk to a point because he only did it for 13 games or whatever it was. He had made a heck of a run. Everything clicked so well when he was there. It's no guarantee that it keeps going. But this good perspective, though. I interesting take, and I'm sure looking back, we're gonna mark what kind of value they get out of this contract. It's inevitable when you sign a quarterback to a deal like that. 3 years later, they're going to say, okay, how did it turn out? But I agree with Michael to a point, but at the same time, that could have been a dangerous game to play, the shell game at the time. We had all kinds of talk, should they go after Brady? I don't know who else, though, you were really willing to have. Phillip Rivers, I don't think, was a guy that they had any interest in. There were other guys that they could have put in there, but clearly the continuity of keeping Tannehill in there was a huge priority, and they paid for it.
Yeah, and because of a quarterback market that we had never seen before.
The question is, how much less could they have signed him for?
Look how many starters were signed as backups this offseason. Starters.
Well, that's what he's getting at, right, is if they had played their cards a little differently and waited it out, obviously they would have then had to deal with the pandemic and all that that would have complicated things. But that aside, if they waited it out, worst case scenario, somebody would have had to really jump the gun and offer him a big contract to go elsewhere. And who would that have been? In retrospect, it makes sense to say, I don't know. I don't know if that team was out there. Because the Bucs got the guy they wanted.
Phillip Rivers went to Indy. Dalton's a backup. Jameis Winston's
the Colts,
a backup.
Do you think the Colts, for example, would have made a big play for Tannehill if he were sitting there for a few more weeks?
Don't know. It's a good question.
They waited for a while before they took Rivers.
Yes.
I don't know.
A lot of people think this deal was really good for both. It was a win-win, the Derrick Henry deal, going back on the Derrick Henry.
Oh,
because if you look at this, just because a lot of people were saying, oh, well, just, he signed the tender, let him play for that this year. And do it again next year. Well, that would have been $22.5 million, okay? Instead, he got $25.5 million. So they paid him $3 million more. But to pay him $3 million more if you didn't go that route and to make everybody happy, you also freed up just over $4 million in cap space. So that's a win. That is a win.
Huge. I don't think there's any doubt. I think people are almost unanimous that was a win-win deal, the Henry deal. But it sort of causes you to go back and say, wow, they did it with that. Was it really a win-win? Was it a total win? It was definitely a win for Tannehill. Could it have been done better in retrospect? Probably so, but you know, you can't look back too much on that. I think it's a fair argument to say if they had waited it out, could they have gotten it done for a lot less? Maybe so. But as he pointed out as well, remember I asked him about how much better teams have gotten at managing the salary cap in the NFL. He said it's night and day, basically, since the early days, the 90s, the early 2000s, where teams just didn't really know how to do it very well. And they got themselves constantly in salary cap jail, and that was just sort of the norm. They're way better at it. And now you see John Robinson, in this case, keeping some excellent flexibility going into the season. And I have to think that they're going to play, right? I don't think there's a scenario, do you agree, that the NFL won't play? I think they're going to try to play. I think it's going to have what baseball has. It's going to have a revolving door of players that are unavailable, whether they get injured. Because remember, the injuries don't go away, right? You have a normal amount, which is always a huge deal in football, of regular injuries. And then on top of that, you're going to have some people test positive.
I think it would take a whole lot of bad things happening for the NFL not to play.
Yeah. So,
they're going to start, but I'm saying not to finish.
Because they agreed to the protocols, right? The Players Association agreed with the league on protocols now, so that's a step forward. We were waiting for that. So now the stage is set to open training camp. They agreed to no preseason, right? So the players got what they wanted there.
Well, no, they have not agreed to no preseason.
Didn't they agree to no preseason games? Did I not see that yesterday? Regardless,
I think they're going to come back to what I've been saying all along, that the players have said they don't want preseason. The league is at two preseason games, and I think they're going to meet in the middle and play a preseason
play
game.
Play one.
That's what I think is going to happen. I've been saying that all along. I think they're going to meet in the middle, and they're going to play one preseason game.
Okay, well, this is what I read yesterday. The NFL on Monday made an offer to the Players Association to play no preseason games, a source told Adam Schefter. The players had been pushing to not play preseason games this year, and the league had been seeking to play two games instead of the usual four. So we'll see if that's true.
Well, if that were the case, Willie, if the league – so read that part again. A source told Adam Schefter what?
That the NFL has made an offer to the Players Association to play no preseason
games. Okay, so what is the offer? Because to me, if they've already come out and said, we don't want preseason games, then why aren't we sitting here talking today about a story of – they have made the decision. The PA has agreed. The league has agreed. No preseason.
The league's proposal to the players includes an offer for a longer training camp acclimation period. The NFLPA has not yet informed the league of whether it will accept the proposal. Earlier yesterday, the league said players will be tested daily for the coronavirus for the first 2 weeks of training camp. They reached an agreement as rookies for the Texans and Chiefs were set to report to camp. So it's time. Like all of the waiting to see, they've used up all that time unless they start pushing things back. So they have to get to this. But getting back to the original point, I think built-in flexibility is going to be essential for every team. And knowing who is the third safety, who's the fourth safety, who's the fifth safety? You know, at every position, you got to have a deep, deep group of players that you'd be willing to call upon, because you might have to dig deeper than you've ever dug before in a season to get through it.
Let's go to Adam. He wants to weigh in. Adam, what's up?
Hey, man. So I don't know how everybody feels about it, but I personally feel like there should be a premium put on players who act right and who do it right. Like, Derrick Henry never come out once and said, oh, they better pay me. And, you know, Le'Veon Bell, he ended up getting paid by doing that. But honestly, I think Derrick Henry should make more money than that guy. I think teams should look at guys different. You remember when Steve McNair, like, this just thing pops in my head, but when Steve McNair was locked out the way he was locked out, like, that never sat well with me, and I always go back to it because he was such a good dude who always did it right here. So I just feel like players should be treated better. That's why I was happy to see him get paid this year. I know it was a stretch, but personally I wanted to see him get paid because he's just such a good dude.
Well, hold on a second, Adam, because I don't disagree with you. I think we certainly root for people that do things the right way. So you brought up Le'Veon Bell. Do you think – let me start there. Do you think that's a good contract for the Jets?
Maybe for the Jets, but anybody else who has any potential to put fans in the stands, no.
His cap hit is $15.4 million this year. Do you think that's good for Le'Veon Bell? I mean, for the Jets?
No. I don't.
Yeah. that's a horrible deal.
He's got to be incredible for that to be worth.
There's no sign whatsoever that he's going to be incredible. And David Johnson, by the way, is the next highest paid running back when it comes to the salary cap hit for the Texans, and it's 11.1. So to your point, I agree. But do you overpay because somebody else overpaid?
I look at him, like, I like quiet people, man. I do not like people that have to put the attention on themselves. And that's what I love about Derrick Henry is that I don't care if Tannehill throws for 5,000 yards. I feel like Derrick Henry is the number one piece because he's just such a strong leader in there. The fans, everybody just rallies around this one guy. And so I think that's who defense is game plan for. I think that's who everybody's scared of. And so I'm a Derrick Henry guy all the way, man. I don't know if you could tell that about me, but I'm a huge Derrick Henry fan. So.
Well, I think his popularity, don't you think his popularity,
too,
for all the reasons that he just said, is going to soar to another level
because of this.
I think because of the way he came together with the team here and on top of what he did on the field and what he did as a leader, I think he's got a chance to rise up the ranks in terms of where he sits in Titans' favorite players' history, right? He's soared up there. Like, I don't know. He's not Eddie George yet.
But Eddie George is
the standard.
Yep.
Right? But he's moving up in that category. And if he does it for a couple more years, he'll get into that neighborhood. Eddie George was always such an amazing spokesperson, too, for the team. Derrick Henry is rising in that category, too. I don't know if he'll ever get to Eddie George's level. But the domination that he has, and now that you've put aside any potential for the next few years of, well, he should be getting paid more, or, boy, they got to get that deal done. They've eliminated all of that.
Yeah.
I think that is so huge for the chemistry and how everybody has come together here. That's worth something.
I would say most would not have any – there would not be any pushback to what Adam just said. But I'm just not, and certainly not any pushback from us, because, I mean, we know how vitally important Derrick Henry is to this team. We're rooting for him, too, and we like the way he conducts himself. But you can't overpay because somebody else overpaid. Like, don't fall into the trap of – there's bad franchises for a reason. And the Jets are historically a bad franchise. They make poor decisions all the time. All the time. So don't fall in their footsteps. Like, I don't think you do that because, yes, everything you said is true, but why would you – and even if we all feel he's the best running back in the league, why would you go what everybody looks at and says, the Jets, what in the hell were you thinking? $15.4 million this upcoming year for Le'Veon Bell. That's his cap hit. That's an awful – that's not a bad deal. That's a horrifically awful deal. Awful. Like, Le'Veon Bell last year was what? He was an average running back.
On a team that struggled.
Average running back.
You know, but remember, we talked to – I don't know if he's an average player. I think he's still better than average. But
when's the last big season he had? How many years has it been?
Well, it's been – he sat out a whole year.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. So do we ever think he's – do we have any proof that he's going to return to that?
Every year you get older, you're less likely to have that. Now, it does happen, and I do think there is a scenario where if they have Darnold playing the whole time – remember, they had about the worst quarterback situation you could possibly have for a section of the season. That didn't help his production. I think the offense will be better.
Was Carolina good last year?
Not really.
Not really? They were horrible. So,
but the Jets weren't horrible.
Shouldn't Christian McCaffrey be horrible? You're saying, well, he played on a bad team. Okay.
But they had better quarterback
Saquon play. Barkley played on a bad team. Christian McCaffrey played on a bad team. Kenyon Drake played on two bad teams. And yeah. He still had a really good year.
I see your point. I see your point. I just think he can be good. But worth $15 million is a whole different story. Because
that's an awful
deal. To be worth $15 million, you've got to be a dominant player.
Yeah, those days are gone for him.
I think so. I think that's fair.
So I just I don't want to see the Titans fall, or nobody should ever fall in the trap of, well, they overpaid, so we like our guy, so we want to make him have more money than the team than the guy who got way overpaid. Like, that's not good business. That's not good business sense at all. Remember, what did Floyd Reese used to tell us when he was the general manager of the Titans and he did a weekly with us for an hour? I can give a player, a $1 million a year player, $5 million a year.
Yeah.
It doesn't make him a $5 million a year player. He's still a million. If we see his value as this is what he brings to the table, he's worth $1 million a year, but we give him $5 million a year, all of a sudden he doesn't go out and have a career year. He's still a $1 million a year player. You know what I mean? It doesn't change the player just by what you give him. So don't overpay people. I mean, it doesn't make them better. It doesn't mean you're going to get more production out of them because you overpaid them. So I actually like, and if you listen to Michael Jannetty, what he said, he loves the deal too because he feels like, what was his main point? Like, that's right where he needed to be. Like, that's a good contract for the Titans. It's a good contract for Derrick Henry in the position that he plays. That's what they deemed as the value in today's landscape. That's what I took from it. Is that what you took from it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the key is the landscape. They took into account the landscape.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure helped them along in taking the security from the player side, and from the team side, they get certainty and they get rid of all of the potential distractions that could come with playing for the 1 year deal,
yep.
Which they easily could have done.
Especially next year when you go, yeah. Oh, you're going to ask him to do that again?
What's going to happen next offseason?
All right, so now
how refreshing would that be to not have to talk about any of that?
All right, we will come back and talk to Ian Fitzsimmons. On the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live here at Bridgestone Arena. Nashville Predators set to hit the ice in less than 30 minutes. I guess we're calling this July training camp. I don't know. Willie called it summer camp. I don't know what we're calling it. It's the return to play for the National Hockey League. Predators will have an exhibition game against the Dallas Stars on the 30th. And of course, later this week, or within less than a week, they will head to their hub city in Edmonton. Of course, game one against the Coyotes in the qualifying round will be on August the 2nd. Good to actually have these talks. It's been a while since we've had some live sports talk when it comes to hockey here in our city.
Yeah, Ian Fitzsimmons. A little jealous of you, by the way.
Sorry. Well, what do you mean jealous?
You're watching sports technically live. And
yeah, it's pretty cool. We were able to do this last week, although it is cold in here, but it is hot outside, so I guess it's a good balance, huh?
It's worth it.
Yeah, it is. Ian Fitzsimmons does a tremendous job on ESPN. Of course, you can hear him on ESPN Radio. Loves college football, loves sports, and we love talking to him. Ian, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys, doing well. And by the way, it's a heat index over here in Dallas, Texas, of about 118 today. Don't be complaining about that the cold Bridgestone Arena, all right? And yeah, I'm jealous, too. You're getting ready to watch live sports. Now, last night, dude, during the show, I actually got hooked watching Angels and Padres. I mean, I forgot Eric Hosmer was even on the Padres, and I'm watching Angels and Padres. And I'm telling you, the level of excitement, I had to remind myself that this was actually on. This exhibition game was live and happening, and it wasn't some replay that I've been watching the last 4 months. So it is damn good to be having sports back. I just hope we keep everybody safe.
I know. This could be a really exciting week. Couple days, Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL. I mean, we actually could have some real stuff to talk about where, the last 4 months, it's been interesting to say the least. So where are you on the college football, because we talked about this earlier, Luke Fickell's comments, Cincinnati's head coach, which I didn't have an issue with what he said. I don't know how you feel about it, but where are you at on where you think we're headed for the fall?
I think all coaches are going to be optimistic. You know, my brother is a special teams coordinator and tight ends coach right there at Vanderbilt.
Yep.
Coach O, McGee, he said, look, hey, we're ready to play football. I mean, every coach is wired one way, to go win. But they're not doctors. They have no idea. Then they're not, infectious disease experts. So they're doing their job. They're trying in the best of their ability to get these guys, one, to be able to stay safe, two, to get ready to play football. They, in my opinion, they don't have any more of a clue as to what is or isn't going to happen than you and I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a damn doctor. I have no idea. I know what I'm being told, from whether it's coaches, athletic directors, or, I talked to SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey about a week and a half ago on air and off air. And it was pretty much the same message on and off air. He had a very, how do I put this? Realistic expectation when it comes to whether his level of optimism. He says he told me his level of optimism when it comes to whether we are or aren't going to have football, it ebbs and flows with reality. And I thought that was a perfect way to approach not just the game of football, right, which we all love, but the game of life right now. I mean, it changes day to day. So, when coaches talk about, whether we're going to play, we're not going to play, how you keep the players safe. And I do believe, by the way, that the players are safer and under better care those elite medical staffs of whether it's Cincinnati, LSU, Vandy, Alabama. I do believe they're in a safer place. Hell, we would all be in a better place if we had the attention and medical staff of some of these Power Five schools. I mean, to be
right.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But the to know whether we are or aren't going to play, man, who knows? But from what I'm being told, is that we're going to have some form of football come the fall, and we'll have basically an official, from what I understand, and again from what I've been told, by the end of the week, next week. So it's, come Thursday or Friday of next week. So we're looking, 8-9 days. I think we'll have a more, line as to what is going to happen. But right now, guys, I mean, it everything changes with reality. And reality, and in this crazy world we're living in, changes day to day.
By the way, I agree with you on the safer at school, because I know some coaches have said that, and people or commissioners and people will be like, come on. Then at home, I agree with you exactly what you just laid out. And, oh, by the way, the supervision probably is a lot better at school with the coaching staff and everything else than they probably get at home.
Oh,
right?
There's
the rules.
Out of my mind, man. the only problem that coaches have is, right now they're only allowed to be with them, I think it's either 6 or 8 hours out of the day, because now we're past voluntary workouts. So what the big question you have is, what are they doing the rest of that time? Now some coaches have basically quarantined the team, and you go to the hotel, the dorm, and that's about it. Some haven't. Remember a few weeks ago, you had a bunch of LSU players that were out, at a couple bars, and a bunch of them got COVID-19. So that's the biggest thing, but that's going to happen at home anyway. But they're not getting tested on a regular basis, and when you are, the medical care, if you do contract it, at these elite institutions, is going to be better than what you're going to get at home. I mean, I firmly believe that. It'll be better when I get here in Dallas, Texas.
Ian Fitzsimmons is on the line with us. Well, speaking of that, I'm going to pause the college football talk since you are in Dallas. There are three monster states when it comes to high school sports and especially football. Florida just came out and said, yeah, we're going to have fall sports. California came out and said, yeah, no, we're not going to have fall sports. Where is Texas on fall sports at this point?
Man, it was a report about a week and a half ago that the head of DISD, which is the Dallas Independent School District, was very skeptical that high school football was going to be played in Texas. And you talk about
wow,
an excrement storm. That one that one comment it went this whole state went spinning, because you don't have Friday Night Lights in Texas, Podna. That's almost as big, if not as big, as saying there's no college and pro football. That is a lifeline for so many small communities. Heck, I just drove my girls and I went on a daddy-daughter trip all the way out to Red Lodge, Montana to see my dad. That's a long-ass drive, too, by the way. I swear I said I'd never do it again, but a pandemic hit. I wasn't going to an airport, and I wasn't getting on an airplane. So we loaded up the truck and drove.
How long was it?
It was awesome. If you've got kids, I can't, you know, you mask up, they Clorox up, you know, they were unbelievable, and it was memories made for a lifetime.
Awesome.
It was awesome. I mean, you know, I went whitewater, horseback riding, you name it, man, hikes. It was an absolute blast.
Are we talking about 20 hours in the car one way?
That's about right, man.
Ooh.
I think total miles logged, and when you're talking about, you know, going up the Beartooth Pass, which Walter Cronkite called the most amazing thing his eyes had ever seen. Well, let me tell you something. He was right. And I've been to Disney, I've been to Ireland, the Cliffs of Moher, you name it, man. And the Beartooth Pass between Montana and Wyoming is the most amazing thing that I've ever seen. That alone was worth the over 3,000 miles logged and 49 hours plus in the truck. Total drive. We got out of the truck, we got in, and one of my, I can't remember which one of my daughters went, what's that smell? I'm like, that's but it was worth it, dude. But I've been going back to Friday Night Lights, that's one where there was a report this morning I saw that 5A and 6A ball, big boy high school football, was already thinking about canceling. And you talk about a lifeline. My point of the story of that road trip was, we're driving through all these small towns in Texas, right, heading up through Wichita Falls and all the way to Amarillo, and you're going through Quanah, Texas, and Childress, and every one of them has a little high school football stadium, you know, and that is the lifeline of those communities. And if we don't have high school football, man, the little mom and pop shops, you know, the diner, the drive-in, the diner, you know, that is next to the high school football stadium, it's going to be packed every Friday night. You know, that's all going to suffer. And again, you got to keep the players safe, and people don't talk about the coaches enough, man. You got Nick Saban is what, 68 years old? I mean, go on down the list of Kerry Combs at Ohio State. How old? I mean, he has a fire of a 20-year-old. But how old is Coach Combs now? I mean, he's got to be mid-60s as well. That's just a couple off the top of my head. I don't know how old Ted Roof is, a defensive coordinator Vandy is, but, you know, you got to keep all of these people safe. And some of these high school coaches, you know, are in their mid-60s, early 70s as well. That's the biggest thing is we want the escape. We want the joy of the game, but you also have to do the right thing. And that is a very fine line, man, of trying to figure out how to do it. But if they don't have high school football here and across in Tennessee as well, right there in Nashville, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, I mean, those Friday nights are special. And if they don't have that, forget recession, man. We're going to be in a depression recession. But you have to also do the right thing, and that's a hard decision to make, man.
Without having, Ian, basically someone in charge of college football, somebody to come out, one voice,
which
right?
Should have been done years ago, but go ahead.
I know. I think this thing continues to grow. I think at some point they're going to be forced to do it because it just makes way too much sense. It makes no sense, really, at this point, not to have that one voice. But if there is, let's go for the sake of this conversation, there is going to be a season, and one conference is playing 9 games, and this conference is playing 10 games, and this conference played 8 games, and they played 11. How do you make all that work? I mean, you have to get everybody on the same page, and I don't know if they can do that.
The College Football Playoff Committee is going to need an open bar at the Gaylord Hotel in Irving, Texas. I mean, just rolling it all. I mean, Don Julio, 1942 to Tito's Fine Texas Crafted Vodka. I mean, bring it all in, man, because they're going to need it. I look, that's a question that I don't have an answer to.
Yeah.
You know, you have to look at that those 8 games that maybe the ACC plays versus 10 games that the SEC may play. I've heard that the SEC may go conference only and a plus one. So that plus one group would keep, Texas, LSU intact, Arkansas, Notre Dame intact, you know, games like that. Maybe Alabama, play TCU at Jerry World, whatever it may be, who knows. But when you don't have, that extra data point, and that's something that, the Big 12 finally went to, going to a championship game. They didn't have that extra data point that the committee was being able to evaluate these teams. Like the SEC with their championship game, that gave them one more game to evaluate. And that's why the Big 12 actually finally said, all right, hell with it. Yes, we'll have a championship game to get that extra data point for the College Football Playoff Committee. Well, who the hell? I've been told a million times that there's one word that has come up, whether I talked to Commissioner Sankey, whether it's Cole Kublik, whether it's, Clay. I mean, you name it. They all say one thing. And it's one word that constantly comes up when discussing how football is going to look if we play. And that word is different. Every coach, every athletic director, I was talking to Jeremiah Donati from TCU 2 weeks ago, different came up. Rob Mullins at Oregon, different. I mean, that's the only thing I can tell you is, one, open bar for the College Football Playoff Committee. Two, it's going to be very difficult because it's going to be different because every conference is going to have, different data points. And it ain't going to be easy, man. And, again, that's where a Power 5 commissioner needs to be in place. It should have been in place years ago. Nick Saban's talked about it. Dabo Swinney has talked about it. Urban Meyer talked about it. And it has fallen on deaf ears. Mark Emmert, all he does is look at his direct deposit every 2 weeks. That's all that man does. He gets paid a hell of a lot of money to do nothing as the head of the NCAA. Power 5 has long needed their own commissioner. And maybe this pandemic is actually going to get that done. Who knows?
Any idea who in your mind would be the perfect candidate?
Greg Sankey. The man is wicked smart, and he is a realist. He's not an optimist. He's not a pessimist. He deals with reality. And, again, just so unbelievably brilliant. He doesn't let emotion get involved. He is one of the more impressive men that I've met in athletics, college or pro. That hands down, boom. I don't know if he might be too smart to take the job. I say, remember when Colin Powell? I wanted him to run for president. He was too smart to run for president. Sankey might be too smart to actually take that gig, but that's by far no hesitance. Wouldn't hesitate for one second. It would be Sankey.
I like it. I can't disagree with that. He's certainly impressive. We've had many, many dealings with Greg Sankey over the years, and I can't argue with anything you just said. Only thing I would say is you're a better dad than me because I love my kid, but I don't know if I could do 40 hours
in
the car.
I'm telling you, man, and my girls are 14 and 12, right? And they don't.
I got an 8-year old,
and they were amazing.
14 and 12.
I'm telling you, dude. I recommend it if you got vacation. Load up the truck and hit it because it was an absolute blast. It really was.
Right.
Memories for a lifetime, man. And instead of the Beartooth Pass and turn around and drive back, you'll be good.
I think you might have sold me on this. Good stuff. Well done, Ian. Always good to talk to you. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Be well, boys. See you.
All right. Ian Fitzsimmons does a great job. ESPN, ESPN Radio, and you can tell his passion for football for sure. We'll come back and wrap up the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase next. Appreciate Ian Fitzsimmons for joining us. Good conversation with him, as always. You can hear him and Freddie Coleman on ESPN Radio. They do a really good job at night, and you can hear them on our airwaves. Don't forget, you can stream us from anywhere in the world. Yeah, download the Game Nashville app. That's free and easy to do. You can also enable your Alexa skill or Google Home if you've got that set up at home or at work, and ask it to play 102.5 The Game. It's that easy. I've got that set up in many rooms in my house. Or you can always live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Adam Vingen to kick off the third hour of the program. We'll talk to him. He covers the Predators for The Athletic. And we'll get a new Braves reporter coming up in the final hour. And she will join us. Kelly Krull with Fox Sports. And so we'll get into all things as Major League Baseball gets ready in a couple of days to their return to play. Well, they're not returning to play. They're starting to play. It's not a return to play because they never did play any regular season games. But what was interesting, Marquise, is when you see the protocols that the NBA is very, very close. They're less than a week and a half away from their return to play. And the NHL is less than 2 weeks away from their return to play. That they had to go through all this testing, and the NHL had, what, over 2,600 people tested? Is that right?
Yes.
And they came back with how many positive tests?
Zero.
That is, like, there is no way you could have ever convinced me that was going to happen. No chance.
No,
I would have been like, no way. If I would have bet, I would have lost. I lost everything because there's no chance I would have bet that it would have came back 0.0.
Yeah, absolutely. And the NBA did the same thing. So zero players in the NBA out of 346 tests tested positive with the virus. And this is their last results of July 13th. So they're in this bubble and they have no players that tested positive. And they start, you know, two team scrimmages tomorrow. So, you know, obviously that's going to be a little different, but there's players that are out here fishing, players going to the barbershop on the campus, and all these different things that they're doing in this bubble, and no player has tested positive. So I think that's a good sign to say that, hey, we may have been a little bit of optimism, like, with it actually finishing, because we say, yeah, it's going to start, but will it finish? And this kind of gives us hope that, hey, maybe they can get this finished in October.
Well, certainly that's the plan. It's still early, but look, I'll tell you this. I think there's a chance they like the bubble better than they ever thought they would.
I think there's a chance of it. I like the bubble. I want to live in the bubble, to be honest with you. If you've seen the NBA bubble, I would love to live there.
Right, they live a little bit different than us, though.
Yeah, so they do.
It's probably a little less cool to them than us, but I'm just saying, I think they may end up liking the bubble a little bit more. Not that they want to permanently, you know, do this moving forward, but I'm just saying they may end up liking it more than they probably thought they would. Because I think a lot of them went in going, man, this is going to suck.
No,
this is going to be the worst.
No, absolutely. And you're away from your family. Then I'm stuck in this room. But it's actually, outside of Rondo complaining about his hotel room, it's been pretty much fine since then. So, you know, I think players are now getting into the groove of, now we're here for basketball, and we're getting into that mindset, and a positive mindset to be exact. So, you know, I think now that they're kind of getting in the groove of the bubble, that everybody's focused on basketball, then we can get this thing going and finally get some good basketball and then some hockey later on. You know, especially when the Preds scrimmages start, and then we got baseball this week. So it's hope. It's keeping hope for sports. And, you know, it's a kudos to Gary Bettman and Adam Silver for coming up with a plan. And, you know, when baseball was going through their limbo and the NFL was kind of sitting back in their lounge chair, not coming up with any plans until late July, you know, kudos to Gary Bettman and Adam Silver for coming up with a plan and coming up with, look, this is what we're going to do. You know, NHL, they have their phases. The NBA has their bubble and their protocols, and they came up with this plan, and they're executing it, and they're executing it well because they have no players in their league that test positive. And the NBA plays in the same campus as MLS, and MLS has a different story than what NBA does. So it's good to see.
But do they have any new stories since Dallas and Nashville?
Well, they haven't. And
right, that's what I'm getting at. Like, that was the story before they all started up, or before MLS started up. But since they've been going, have I missed? I mean, has there been all kinds of drama with positive tests and players disappearing from rosters and or things happening? Have I missed those stories?
Well, there hasn't. But and even when the NBA, before they started, they had their stories too. And obviously, when we look at the Brooklyn Nets, they had like 5 to 6 players test positive with the virus. And, you know, they're not in the bubble. They've had players who have not traveled to Orlando yet, like Eric Bledsoe, who plays for the Milwaukee Bucks, who's now traveling to Orlando after he tested negative with the virus. So, you know, there's been stories surrounding it, but look, everything has went off without a hitch when it comes to, you know, MLS now. Now that they got Nashville SC and Dallas out of the way, with the NHL and with the NBA, so it seems like they figured out a proper game plan to how to get this season underway and kind of give the NFL some advice, maybe, you know, by doing the right thing of like, hey, you can pull this off. It's going to be a little bit difficult for you, but here's our game plan and here's how we did it.
I guess what I'm about to say, it's not apples to apples to what we're talking about, but golf has been going for a while, and I know it's not contact and it's outdoors and there's all kinds of things working in their favor, but for the most part, right, they've been humming along just fine. You know, they've had hiccups, but they've been humming along just fine. NASCAR has been humming along just fine. They had obviously a big name in Jimmy Johnson. They've had a hiccup. He steps away. He comes back. But they've been humming along. UFC is like the one. And once again, NASCAR, totally different. Outdoors or in a car by himself. So it's not it's contact for cars, not contact for individuals. So I get it. It's not apples to apples. But the other one is the UFC. And they've had hiccups and they've had positive tests and players have had to bow out or fighters have had to bow out and somebody replaces them. But the point is, since they've said they were coming back to hold fight nights and pay-per-view cards, they have, and guess what's happened? They've taken place. They've all happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a combat sport. Now, granted, it's less numbers. It's just one-on-one in an octagon. It's not like a setting of 11-on-11. And so I said, it's not apples to apples, but the point is, the sports that have come back, and they are playing. There hasn't been any stoppage.
Yeah, and absolutely. And when you look at UFC, too, a lot of people don't take into account, you got to also test the team. You're not only just testing the fighter. You're testing the team that surrounds the fighter.
They have a lot of people in their camp.
They have a lot of people, and then you're taking into account main card and prelim fights. So you're having initially 20 or so fighters at this one thing, and then only one, you know, there's only been 2 fighters that tested positive since they started back. And, you know, all it's been is, okay, you tested positive, okay, you're out, and then we're going to plug in another fighter.
Insert this fighter. Yep.
Insert this fighter here. So, they had their plan for that. So, look, I think, and when we look at the NFL, I will say they've kind of lounged a little bit because they thought this pandemic was going to have a curve once they started. And it's not. And now they're starting to realize, like, hey, maybe we should have, like, jumped ahead of this a little bit sooner. Because I think they just sat back and said, look, by the time August, September comes, this thing will be over and done with and hopefully out the way. And we can start our season the way we were going to start it. But now, obviously, they're going to have to make some adjustments as well. So hopefully, if you're Roger Goodell, you get on the phone with Adam Silver or you get on the phone with Gary Bettman and you ask them how they got this process right. Get on the phone with Dana White. Even though you think UFC's barbaric or whatever you may think about UFC, he's done it right. So get on the phone with some of these guys and then figure out how to get this thing underway and how you guys can take some protocols to put in your league.
All right, we will come back and talk some hockey. We're at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators are out on the ice, and they are practicing. We'll talk to Adam Vingan, who covers the Predators for The Athletic, to kick off the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.